What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Welcome to Creature Feature, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and I'm recording from my living room. I've got my DJ dog Cookie on the ones and twos, and today I want to take you on a knowledge journey to the animal kingdom. Right now, romance can be hard for a lot of people, as we're all self-isolating to keep ourselves and others safe amidst this pandemic. So I was thinking we could check in on some animals and how their romantic lives are going, so we can live vicariously through them, or, as we'll see, maybe romance isn't always all it's cracked up to be. Will you be wooed by throbbing red face balloons, pufferfish art, and sea slug conga lines? Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question. If your date is 30 times your size, how do you make sure you don't end up as her appetizer? Right now, dating is pretty difficult given the fact we need to self-isolate to prevent the spread of COVID, but that doesn't mean I can't take all of you, my listeners, on a date right now to the realm of learning. Romantic, no? Let's take a look at some of the weirdest dating habits in the animal kingdom. Even within our own species, our tastes regarding romance are highly diverse. Some people like candlelit dinners, some people like monster trucks, or candlelit monster trucks. Personally, I tried to woo my potential mate on our first date by telling him all of my favorite weirdest parasites, and somehow we're still together. But when it comes to attracting a partner, animals truly have us beat when it comes to the sheer drama of it all. Joining me today to discuss some of these hopeless and sometimes boneless romantics is producer, writer, and also hosts the Rough Stuff podcast, Bridget Greenberg.
Hey, it's me. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Bridget. It's so good to have you on.
Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like I got off easy last time since you were talking about cute animals, and I am very squeamish about slugs and bugs. So
that's right.
Yep.
Yeah, so unfortunately, yeah, this does actually have slugs in it.
Yep.
And I'm just realizing that now. And I remember you did tell me you do not like slugs specifically. Unfortunately, I started writing these notes before I booked you as a guest.
Yeah.
So, you know.
The train left the station. We're doing this.
It's got two entirely different species of slugs on it, Bridget.
Let's go.
Slug train has left. And mm-hmm. we're just going to have to deal.
Just going to hop on that slimy, gross train.
But first, we're actually not going to talk about a slug, much to your delight. We're cool. going to talk about hooded seals.
All right. Seals are cool.
Yeah, seals are cool. Have you ever heard of a hooded seal?
I don't think so.
Well, that's just wonderful. I always love it when my guest does not know about an animal because it's so fun to listen to you freak out when I tell you.
Cool, because I have an idea that I like seals, but no. We'll see.
I like this seal, so clearly you will too.
Yeah.
Hooded seals are found in the central and western North Atlantic oceans and coasts. They kind of look like Dalmatians. They have light brownish, whitish, grayish fur with dark spots, and they range in color variations a bit, but yeah, they're like little ocean Dalmatians. And they actually get pretty big. So they can grow up to about 8 feet long, which is 2.5 meters, and weigh up to 900 pounds. So these are some big buddies.
Boy. Yeah.
Big boys and girls, yeah. And the boys are bigger than the females. They eat all sorts of sea critters like fish, crustaceans, krill, and squid. They are adept swimmers. They're able to dive for about 25 minutes, although some individuals have lasted over 50 minutes in a dive. And they can dive from a few hundred to over 3,000 feet or 1,000 meters under the ocean, which... That's, you know...
For a mammal, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, a whale, I know, can be under for a long time. But that that feels like it's a rival. Like,
yeah,
it's up there.
It's up there. It's a long time. Yeah, seals are pretty good swimmers and pretty good divers, especially the hooded seal. And I like the idea of being an ocean explorer in a little submarine, and then just like a hooded seal comes right up to... your viewing porthole or something, and it's just like, ha!
Ha! And like, it rockets down. Like, meet you down there. I also like
later,
that some...
sucker.
I also like that some are a lot better than others, because it makes me feel like there's a SEAL Olympics that happens. Like, they get competitive with each other.
Dun-dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun. Dun. And it's like a harp seal just kind of flopping aimlessly. And then sea lions show up and they're like the jock bros of the SEAL Olympics.
Yeah, they're the track stars.
They really are. I mean, sea lions aren't actually seals. Obviously, they're very closely related, but they can move on land a lot better than seals can.
Yeah.
Because they've got those long, long legs.
Yeah, they're the true athletes.
Yeah, they're the bros. I think we've actually talked about that before, like that sea lions are the jock bros of the sort of a seal walrus group.
For sure. And they're the most attractive ones. Like, they're the hottest ones.
I'm glad to hear like your preference in sort of like seals and sea lions, and learning about your romantic preference amongst those. Like,
yes. You know. Yeah. Sea lions. That's, you know, those are straight up hotties.
Yeah.
Those are tens.
Yeah, Bridget, attracted to sea lions.
love that moniker for me, but I said it, so.
You did say it, and we did capture it on tape, so there is no avoiding it now.
It's out there now.
Look, here, I'm going to give you just some free compromise, which is that hooded seals, I'm hot for hooded seals. So there you go. Like, we've got mutually assured destruction here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, our internet's going to shut off after this gets released.
So, unfortunately for me and my romantic inclination towards the hooded seals is that they're typically solitary, and they, you know, they're not the most gregarious of seals.
They're brooding. I get it. Like the Edward Cullen
type. Got
their
hoodie. Yeah, they've got their hood. They're hooded because they wear a hoodie, and they're like, nobody understands me.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
But that just makes me want them more.
Yeah.
But they do get together in large groups during mating or molting seasons, and they gather in these big groups to find a partner or shed their fur, which sounds great and cool. So the reason they're called hooded seals is that males have a weird hood on top of their snout. So when this hood is flaccid, which is a great word that I love to use, it kind of just looks like a flat flap of dark skin on top of their muzzles. It isn't like super apparent. You're like, oh, okay, here's a seal, and he's just kind of got like maybe a slightly more prominent muzzle than most seals. But oh boy. That's not all it is, guys. It contains multitudes. There's a hidden surprise inside these seals.
Oh, no.
Because they can inflate their nose right up like a big old fluffy bubble.
Oh, okay.
just scroll down this doc, Bridget. Yep. Just take a look-see here.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it's a... okay. Well, so I guess when it's red, that's when it's inflated.
Okay, so I understand the confusion.
Yeah.
You're seeing two different... See, okay. This is like a reversible nose here. This is a versatile nose balloon. And there are two modes that this nose balloon can be in. So the first one is when they basically just inflate the nose on top of their head. And right. It just looks like they have this big bulbous nose balloon. It's this big floppy bubble of skin.
It looks like there's another animal like saying hi to it upside down. Like it crawled on its face.
Right.
It's like, what up?
It's like, imagine if your nose was, instead of being, you know, firm, like was made out of sort of a balloon material, and you could like plug your nostrils and just like blow really hard and it blows up like a balloon. And that's basically
that's
what's happening
dope.
Here. What also happens is that's just their first form, their first nose form. Their final nose form is they can evert the lining of their nostrils. So like push out this nasal lining outside of their nostrils and blow a big red balloon that comes out of their nose.
That looks so painful.
I don't think it is because it's designed to do that. It does. Yeah. It does seem like it would hurt.
It looks like they're screaming in all of these too.
Well, that's just their natural. That's their resting scream face.
Yes.
But they. So imagine like when you blow a bubble, like a gum bubble, mm-hmm. with some, let's call it bubble gum.
Yeah.
And you blow some bubble gum, like you get this big bubble, but you're like blowing it at that thin layer of gum and filling it with air and blowing it out of your mouth. That's what they're doing, but out of their nose. Mm. And the bubble gum is their nasal lining, and it's permanent. It's attached to them. Thank you. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's this big red bubble that they blow out of their nose, and it is made out of their nasal lining, and they can inflate it and deflate it as much as they want, whenever they want. And typically when they want to do it is when it comes to mating the ladies.
Yeah, that's I get the appeal.
Yeah.
That big old nose bubble.
Big old nose bubble. And it's red, too, which is fun. That's a romantic color, I feel like.
It is.
You know, like a big... Yeah, it's like one of those... And it's kind of... It's almost because, I guess, like, it's sort of weird nose lining. It's almost the shape of a heart. You know, it's not like a perfectly round sphere. It's kind of... I mean, probably more closely resembles a kidney bean, but let's say a heart. Let's say a red heart.
Let's say a heart. If these were, like, Looney Tunes characters, they would for sure be a Pepe Le Pew kind of heart.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Just this bit like, you know, how their eyes pop out of their sockets. It's their nose popping out of its nose hole.
Yeah.
Except inside out. Yeah. Anyways.
It seems so uncomfortable.
I think they're okay with it, though.
I think they're okay.
Yeah, but it does look uncomfortable. It makes me feel like if I did that, it would be uncomfortable. But again, I'm not a male hooded seal. So there you go.
If only.
If only. So what they do is they blow out that big red nose balloon and they flop it around menacingly at their rivals for mates like a it flops around like a big sock'em bopper. And they use, so first of all, it's an intimidating display, and because it takes a lot of energy to physically fight each other, the way they kind of try to minimize injuries to each other when competing for females is whoever's got the biggest, floppiest nose bubble is probably going to be the strongest anyway. So then they're just like, no, you win. You got the biggest nose bubble. We don't have to come to actual blows.
That's very kind.
Yeah, it's civil. It's very civil.
I was worried you were going to say they like fight nose balloons. Like they, like you said the rock'em sock'em thing.
Well, but you know, sock'em boppers, I mean, they aren't, Well, I really wanted sock'em bopper when I was a kid, but my parents, I don't think they...
Too violent?
I don't know. Yeah, probably too violent. They weren't. They never like put too fine a point on it, and I don't think I really asked that much because I think I had this sense that this would disrupt the peace in the house, and I didn't want to be the one to kind of create a war zone in the house. And so I let the issue subside. But yeah, so they are using these as sort of, you know, it's like a sport. It's like nose sports, but to show their mating potential and to ward off rivals. And they actually also use it to seduce mates. So they wobble it around. They create acoustic sounds with these nose bubbles that are both can be a threatening warning, but also kind of like a serenading their potential mate.
They play Wonderwall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyways, here's Wonderwall.
It's like every freshman dude in college in the dorm.
Exactly. It'd be like, I guess, a human analog is if like freshman dudes like would blow a big balloon out of their nose and then kind of drum it in a circle to try to seduce women, but then also like flap it at each other. Does that make sense? I think it makes sense.
I get it. I've seen it.
Bridget, if you want to see a video of them flapping this thing around, highlighted it for you in pink there, and you can click on it.
It almost looks like it's eating its own nose bubble. Whoa. Oh, that's so weird. Do you remember those, like, when we were kids, there was that, like, putty that you would put at the end of a straw and it would blow up into a balloon?
Yeah, like the, yes, I do. That weird toy that was, like, the Invincibubbles, or I don't remember exactly what they were called.
Right, like, it was an impoppable bubble, and it was just, like, this putty that you blew up. That's what this reminds me of. Oh, look at them fight. This is so weird. They're so awkward.
They just flop at each other, essentially, like, to try to resolve the fight.
Everything about them is just floppy.
Floppy.
They don't
aggressive
have bones.
Flopping.
Yeah.
They do have bones. We are going to talk about some animals that don't have bones, but these guys, they've got bones. It's just surrounded in a very thick layer of flop.
A lot of flubber. Yeah. It
a
looks
lot
like
of floppiness. Yeah.
They're just furry little sacks who.
Yeah. That's accurate. Yeah. They also can inflate and deflate the hood underwater to create threatening acoustic sounds to warn off potential rivals or predators.
That's metal.
This is a multifunctional nose balloon. Unfortunately, females do not have a nose balloon, so I think that's not fair.
Yeah, that's sexism. Plain and simple.
There's got to be like a hooded seal suffragette movement where it's like, give us nose balloons, please.
Yeah, imagine the good they can do with nose balloons.
Behind every great nose balloon is a woman,
yeah,
is how that goes, right?
Yeah, of course, yes. What happens if it pop? Like, did they ever pop? I feel...
You know, that's an interesting question and one I actually avoided researching.
That's fair. I get that. Yeah. Feels like a lot of blood.
Right. I'm not sure I even want to know about that.
Yeah.
But
It seems like they run that risk.
Yeah. I guess like maybe if they have like balloons of equal size, it's going to be like a lightsaber battle, but with balloons. I don't know.
The lamest lightsaber battle.
Right,
I don't know.
Exactly.
I like the fact that they fight and don't want to go for blood. Like they're aggressive, but like they don't mean it.
Yeah. I really love the creative solutions that a lot of animals have come up with to avoid actual fighting with each other. It's pretty wonderful, especially the more artistic ones. Like, we'll flop a big red balloon at each other, and whoever's the floppiest and biggest, we'll just assume is the winner here.
Right, and they're like, so
great. I think that
they're so lazy that they're like, I don't want to flop enough to fight
exactly.
You. It's so much flopping.
Exactly. Have you seen a seal try to throw a punch? It is honestly kind of pathetic. So, you know.
No, it's all their weight.
Elephant seals will actually fight each other. And it's gruesome because they throw their necks together. They kind of just like slam their thick, meaty necks into each other. And they can get really bloodied. And it's pretty horrible. So, yeah, I love these hooded seals. They've come up with a real, real elegant solution here by like blowing their nose holes out.
God, if humans could figure that out, you know?
If we could. Yeah, you know what? Just like sort of ritualized, like instead of wars, whoever's got the biggest balloon, we're going to assume wins. That would be great. I love it.
Yeah.
We can learn so much.
just send out all our best balloon artists.
Exactly.
That's what they're called, balloon clowns?
Exactly. Yeah. Balloon artists. Well, now, Bridget, I don't think all clowns are balloon artists. I don't think you can generalize like that.
I'm sorry to the community.
You should be.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of balloons, okay. I want to talk about pufferfish, who have their own very interesting method of seducing a mate. Mm-hmm. And if getting blasted with nose balloons isn't your thing, maybe you could be seduced by a pufferfish, the living balloon, which, interestingly, they don't inflate themselves to attract a mate. So, spoilers, no, they don't turn themselves into a balloon like a hooded seal. They actually, that ballooning is a defensive technique, and it's not like fun for the pufferfish to inflate itself like that all willy-nilly. I think it's like slightly traumatic. So they really only do that when they feel like their life is in danger. And it really does help them avoid predation, because when you're a big balloon, it hard to swallow you down. And they also have spikes and tetrodotoxins that makes them really deadly sometimes to eat. So they have really figured out this whole, like, I'm going to make myself a horrible balloon that you just can't eat. They've mastered the art of being unappetizing, because I don't want to eat a big poison balloon, and I can't imagine animals in the ocean want that either.
No, growing up by the bay in the ocean, I remember we would see pufferfish, and then we would try to get them to blow up by poking things at them.
So
and then,
mean.
It's so mean. And then I learned how bad it is, like, really, it's not good for the fish. Like, it's
no.
Like, it is traumatic, and I felt horrible about it.
Well,
never again.
You know,
I thought it was fun for them.
Yeah, it does. It looks like it would be fun. To your credit, it does look like it would be fun, because then you would become like, you know, like those bouncy balls that we like when you're a kid, and you like, what were those, like the big
bouncy?
They look like. Yeah, well, like, or the balls that you exercise on as adults, but as kids you, like, sit on and bounce on.
Yeah, the yoga balls, or the ones that you would see in the supermarket that no one would buy.
Right, exactly. And like, so that seems fun as a kid. So for a kid, it's like, if I could turn into a big bouncy ball, that would be perfect.
Hey, a fish could turn into a ball. How could that not be fun for everyone?
How couldn't that be fun for the fish? But it's not, so.
It's not.
Yeah.
No, I learned that.
Yeah, you bullied those fish. So, unfortunately, Bridget, I don't think any of these pufferfish are going to try to woo you, no. Which is a real shame.
That's a shame.
Because
missed out on love.
You really did. And you missed out on one of the most beautiful mating rituals in the animal kingdom. Ooh. Sorry.
Oh, no.
But I know. But it's a species of pufferfish off the coast of Japan called the white-spotted pufferfish. And here we go, I'm going to pronounce this name really good and well. It's called the Torquewiggener Torquewiggener albomaculosis, which has been discovered to create elaborate patterns in the seafloor to woo females.
That's so artistic.
It is artistic. It's beautiful. So the white-spotted pufferfish is a small puffer about 5 inches long. When they're not inflated, they're kind of a boxy-looking fish. And the way that pufferfish swim is they flutter their fins really rapidly that allow them to hover instead of swim. They're kind of like the hummingbirds of the ocean. And they've got little beaks, and their eyes move independently, similar to a chameleon. So actually, pufferfish are one of my favorite fish because they have such expressive faces.
Yeah,
because
they're
their
cute.
Eyes can... They're adorable. They have little beaks that make it look like they have little teeth. So they have a doofy little expression, and their eyes can follow you. And they're also very curious fish. I've had a pufferfish in my aquarium, and it's like the only fish I've had in my aquarium that would like follow me as I walk around the room and get really excited. I would feed it like bloodworms and stuff, and it'd get really excited and come up to meet me, and it would play in the streams. I had like this jet stream of water that was part of the filter system, and it would like kind of like surf the jet stream.
Cool.
And they're just really, they're really fascinating and fun fish. As long as you don't bully them, Bridget. Jeez.
Yeah, I regret it. But this all goes along with my narrative.
Yeah. Your narrative of just
bullying everything in my week. Yeah, and
feeling
regretting
guilty
it immediately.
About everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to help you along with all that guilt.
Yep.
So, to attract a mate, these white-spotted pufferfish will create elaborate crop circles in soft sand on the ocean floor. So this is the males creating these designs for females, and these designs, they kind of look like the mandala or something. You know what I mean?
The things that the monks draw on the sand and then they wipe them away. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Or like some kind of weird jello mold made out of sand. So here's his artistic process. He will clear out the coarse sand, leaving just the finest sand in a circular area. And he's got it, since he's a little pufferfish, he's got to do this with his fins and his beak. You know, he don't got no hands.
Oh.
So he also clears out shells and places them along the rim of his crater, both to clean out the center of it and also to decorate the area outside of his artwork. Did you watch Finding Dory?
Yes.
Her parents like create a line of shells
for her to follow
them,
for
her to find. That's what that they stole that from pufferfish, and they do that, but not to find their long lost daughter, but to attract the ladies.
So
he will work on his beautiful little mating circle for a week, working constantly. Otherwise, it will get destroyed by the current. So these are these are such a zen fish, though. Like, they really, you know, it's like a zen garden, and that idea of the impermanence of their art, and they work so hard at it. These are inspiring little fish.
Yeah, just to find some love.
Just to find love.
And I
exactly.
feel like they're really...
And think about that, you guys.
Yeah, they're putting themselves
out
there.
Exactly.
They're making themselves a target.
Exactly. I mean, I know times are tough right now for everybody who wants to date, but think about these little pufferfish. They got to work on their design for like a week constantly. It's really hard.
They're artists. Yeah.
They're artists. Unfortunately, I feel like with humans, like that's one of the worst... Well, maybe not for everyone, but one of the worst things you can do on a first date is like show someone your art. Like,
yeah.
Here's an art I did.
Oh, I would immediately leave.
Even if it's good art, there's something about sharing your art with someone that is so vulnerable. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it hurts me to think about doing it. Like if I met someone for the first time and I'm like, here's an art I did, it makes me feel naked in a way that physically hurts.
Yeah, it's cringy. That's not a thing. These pufferfish, they're really wearing their hearts on their balloons, on their balloon bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Well said, well spoken. Also, these little crop circles or mating circles have almost perfect radial symmetry.
Oh yeah, I've been looking at this video as you've been talking. I've seen it. It's so cute. They're so cute.
And you see the finished product, right? Like that big crop circle. It's beautiful, right?
It's beautiful. I can't draw a straight line. I don't know how they're doing this.
It's unfathomable. It's a beautiful design. It looks like a sunburst, it's beautiful. And if the female is impressed, she will lay her eggs in the middle of his design. That's like, it's so romantic, right?
I I'm not a softy per se. And that is so sweet. And also, I'm just very impressed. I once tried to spray paint the lines of a soccer field and it was a mess. Mm-hmm. And these fish... We got to get these fish doing some some work on some soccer fields.
My boyfriend and I were trying to cut out circles out of wax paper to line a circular baking tin. And somehow we managed to do every geometric shape except a circle.
It's impossible. These fish are talented.
Yeah, I think we even We even made like a snowflake, but not a circle.
Yeah, a beautiful snowflake, a very complex. Just made the Mona Lisa out of.
Damn it, but I wanted a circle.
You wanted a circle. This is incredible what it's doing. Are they all different?
I think they're probably all slightly different. They're all symmetrical like that, and they all have that sort of general design of like what it is they move their little bodies through the sand, and they have, it's basically like they have these sort of like the time markers on a clock, like they have these divots all through radially symmetrical in the circle. But then in the center, they're kind of doing these like swooshies, like these little like almost waves like radiating out from the center like a sun. And it's it's huge and it's beautiful. It's like, you know, I don't know, like 10 times, 20 times larger than the pufferfish itself. It's incredible.
Yeah, that is I would lay my eggs in that circle.
good to hear that.
Like,
thank you for sharing.
Consider me wooed.
What if crop circles are just aliens trying to woo each other and get another alien to lay its eggs in the center of it?
Or if it's just like creates the alien human species that is our next stage of evolution.
Oh God. Oh no. Oh God. Yeah. Oh no. When it comes to romantic patterns, a lot of human cultures settled upon the heart shape. But where does that come from? It's certainly not very similar to a real heart. An accurate heart shape is more like a lopsided acorn with a bunch of veins and chambers and stuff. One theory is that the heart shape actually comes from the heart-shaped leaves of the silphium plant, which was used as a contraceptive and aphrodisiac in 5th century BC, and was depicted on silver coins in ancient Greece. Turns out we've been horny for plants this whole time. Whoops! When we return, we're going to talk about a little lover with some big problems.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Attack of the 50-Foot Woman,
was a 1958 B-movie about a wealthy heiress who gets turned into a giant lady by an alien. As the trailer states, she was, quote, incredibly huge with incredible desires for love and vengeance. In evolutionary biology terms, this would be an extreme example of sexual dimorphism. Sexual dimorphism is where one sex of a species has significant physical differences from the other, either in size, color, or other elements of anatomy. Think of the colorful male peacock and the more toned-down peahen, or the huge nose and size of an elephant seal compared to the smaller, more normal-looking female elephant seal. Although we often think of male animals of being bigger and stronger, this is definitely not always the case. Many female animals are larger than their male counterparts, such as most species of spiders, many fish, owls, the spotted hyena, and the blue whale. But sometimes the female is so large compared to the male, it becomes a bit of an unfortunate situation when it comes to mating.
I love that the entire premise of some horror movies is just, what if women were huge? It's so revealing, right? Yeah, I don't know if it's supposed to be scary or sexy or like a mix of the two. But I do love it. I love the creativity that goes behind that. Like women, but big as a building.
It's so transparent. Whatever weird. Yeah. Insecurity or fetish
or,
that shows
or fetish, it's very, or both probably mixed, you know, in all tangled I up think, together
yeah. Little column A, little column B.
Unfortunately for the Argonaut octopus, this is not a weird niche fetish. It is a very real thing, and it's a big problem for the males. So Argonaut octopus males have a problem, which is that females see them as a snack. Not sexually, not like a snack as like, you are a snack because you're pretty and I like you, but foodily, because the females, they want to eat them. And so let me give you a little bit of background on the Argonaut octopus. They are indeed an octopus. They are a very interesting cephalopod. They're found all over the world in tropical oceans. And the females are pretty spectacular looking. So they only grow about 4 inches long or 10 centimeters in terms of their bodies, but they actually create shells that grow up to almost a foot. So these shells that they make look like a nautilus shell made out of paper. And if you look in the doc, actually I have a photo of this.
Oh, that's cool.
It really is. It's beautiful. And it's interesting. So nautiluses are that shelled cephalopod that are actually related to octopuses, but this is an instance of convergent evolution, not like the Argonaut octopus didn't like evolve from the nautilus. This is interesting version of convergent evolution where they evolved this shell all on their own. And this shell is actually an egg case that the female creates and lives inside along with her brood. So this egg case is made out of a thin layer of calcite, unlike most shells, which are made out of aragonite, which is a fact I'm sure that the mineralogists out there will like. That's not a word. It's geologists.
Geologists. Yeah, I was like, is there a difference between those two things?
So, in fact, the shell-wearing females look a lot like an extinct cephalopod called the ammonite, which some people may know, like fossil collectors, like those ammonite fossil shell that they're those like spirally fossils. And it was a tentacled creature that resided in a shell. And again, it's likely that this is another case of convergent evolution. Where, this was an extinct cephalopod distantly related to the octopus, but the octopus re-evolved, forming this shell, which is really fascinating. And the Argonaut's shells have a bubble of air in it to keep it buoyant, and they're very thin shells, so very, very light and kind of ethereal looking. But it does provide some protection for the female, and especially for her eggs, and it gives her a little buoyant house to live in and makes it easier to swim around. And that's all great for the female, but males have a very different situation. So They're only a little over a centimeter big, which is about one thirtieth the size of a female with her shell on. So that is real tiny. I got a diagram in there to show you the size difference.
Oh, no. Oh,
it's really cute because, like, you see this female and it's this octopus emerging from a shell looking very strange and very interesting. And then you have this, like, little tiny, like, and that's the male. Just this little tiny, like, dot on it and about the size of her eyeball.
That's so sad.
I know. It's adorable.
It's so cute. They're trying.
They're trying so hard. But the problem for these males is not a sense of inadequacy, but a sense of deliciousness, because they make an easy little snack for the females. So if they try to mate with a female, the female might be just like, hey, you're tiny and small and you fit right in my mouth, and eat them. And it happens. So in order to try to survive this and to actually get the female to accept its sperm, the Argonaut males have perfected the art of social distancing sex, which is by detaching an arm that holds their sperm, and they rip it off and fling it at eligible females like a wiener javelin.
Oh my God, that's cool. What a cool Olympic sport.
Exactly, wiener javelin. So it's actually not their penis. It is called a hectocotylus, which is it's basically they take their tentacle and they put a little sperm packet on it, and then they remove that tentacle and toss it at the female, and the female is like, oh, cool. It's like, oh, it's like an arm holding a bunch of sperm. Perfect present for me. I love it. Thank you.
It's like Amazon, just, oh, cool.
Ah, cool.
My children are here.
Got my sperm tentacle packet today. That's great. Oh, they will sometimes even stockpile these tentacle sperm javelins in their shell and just inseminate their eggs when they're ready. Just hoarding like these wiener tentacle sperm things.
How many, like, I guess they regrow their sperm tentacles, the males.
Yeah, they can regrow their tentacles. It's unclear how often they actually have the chance to mate like that, but yeah, they, in theory, they probably can regrow that tentacle. I don't think it's known whether or not they actually do, or if they're just like, well, my job here is done, and then pass on to octopus heaven. They could regrow the tentacle, and it at least means that they were able to get their sperm to the female without the female just eating the whole dang little guy and not even knowing what she's missing.
Yeah, he could be a great guy.
He could have been a great guy.
Yeah, give him a chance.
We've actually talked about this method of mating before on the show when I think it was in the episode Aliens, and we talked about the blanket octopus. Because blanket octopus males will also use the hectocotylus and by tossing their arm at the female and piecing out. But I think that in this case, just the absolute urgency for these little guys to get away from these huge females as quickly as possible is much more stark. But yeah, it's an interesting technique. Like take it. Take my seed and then run away.
Take my seed. Don't eat me. That's the sad existence. Like, here you go. Here's my arm.
I gotta go. Here, take my love. Be the mother of my children. Bye.
I want to inspire that kind of intimidation.
That is a boss girl. Wait, boss queen? What is it? Boss babe.
Boss bitch.
Boss bitch. Boss bitch. Boss queen. Yes, queen. Eat those males.
You go. They're little snacks. Little snacky snacks.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
And then just put their sperm arm in your pocket.
Exactly. Collect as many sperm arms as you can because you're a boss.
That, I also am super jealous of the idea of, like, yeah, I'm just going to hang on to this for a later time. You know, now is not a great time for me.
Right. Yeah. Like,
down the road, I'm going to want these.
Planning, like, down really good. Just like, you know, you have like a little cupboard full of, like, this one was from Gary. I don't know about Gary. Ooh, this one's from Larry. I did like Larry. I could barely see either
sperm
of them.
Yeah.
They were so
tiny. I don't
know
who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got their own little sperm banks.
Yeah, they got a sperm library. Just check out a book whenever you want, pour it over your eggs, and there you go. You got kids.
Oh God! What a convenient system for the ladies and a terrifying existence for the men.
Exactly. I do love the convenience of it all. So now I want to talk about, I'm sorry to say it, Bridget, but it's slugs times.
Oh, God.
So I have done, I have done you a huge favor, and I have made the photo of the slugs I'm going to talk about really tiny, so you can choose to zoom in on that if you want.
Yeah, that is way too kind. But I appreciate it a lot.
When I say tiny, I made it like a centimeter squared wide, so Bridget doesn't have to look at this unless she wants to.
It is so, you are such a gracious host.
Well, these are banana slugs, and I think even for people who aren't normally grossed out by slugs, these are some intimidating slugs.
Yeah, I know these because, they're the ones I'm like, these are the gross ones. These are the ones that made me afraid.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I bring them up because we talked about, like, with the Argonaut octopus, how they detach their leg and throw it at the female by choice. Well, sometimes a penis isn't meant to be detachable, but animals jailbreak those wieners and detach them anyways.
Of course they're monsters.
Yes, let me tell you the ballad of the banana slugs and their unfortunate romantic existence. And sometimes they... Listen, okay, sometimes they do chew a wiener off, but let me
Oh my God.
Before you judge, let me tell you all about the noble banana slug. So, banana slugs are large, gooey, yellow, terrestrial slugs. There are...
Monsters?
According to some people, it's objective. There are... three species of banana slugs that live in North America, so some of my fellow North Americans may have had the privilege of seeing them in person. Are you one of those people, Bridget? Have you seen a banana slug in person?
I have, and I was physically twitching for like an hour.
Where was this?
I was camping around Big Sur.
Of course, that's Northern California.
That's where they are.
Yep.
I love Big Sur, but I don't really, like, it was beautiful, and then I saw that, and the trip is ruined.
Well, so they do grow up to be around 10 inches long, or they can grow up to 10 inches long, which is about 25 centimeters, and they can live up to 7 years.
I don't know why that grossed me out, that they can be old.
Because they can remember you, Bridget. Yeah, you come back they'll remember you. But yeah, their lifespan ranges from 1 to 7 years, but yeah, they can live pretty long for a dang slug. And here's some cool banana slug facts. They need to keep their skin moist to stay healthy and to help them breathe via gas exchange. So they have a nice thick layer of mucus that they can even create a cocoon out of, so they can bury themselves in soil or leaves and remain dormant until their environment is acceptably moist.
Oh God, everything makes it worse.
Well, maybe this fact will cheer you up. All right, no, I'm lying. It won't, actually. If you try to eat a banana slug, your mouth will fill with expanding slime and your tongue will go numb. So let me explain. You may have heard, I don't know if you live in an area where it's like, I've heard that people dare each other to lick banana slugs. And I remember I was at sixth grade camp and we had a camp counselor who was like, do not lick banana slugs. And if someone... if someone dares you to lick a banana slug, don't do it, because it will, your mouth will fill with goo and it will just like froth up into like this big, these big thick sheets of goo. And I thought she was kind of just telling tall tales, but no, turns out she's right. And the reason this happens is their mucus is made out of mucin granules. These are little teeny tiny microscopic granules that expand when they come into contact with water. So if you lick a banana slug, these granules will expand in your saliva like tiny microscopic bits of mucus rice and fill your mouth with slug pudding.
Oh,
yeah.
I hate that term. I hate that term so much.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. My shoulders are at my ears right now.
Oh, poor Bridget. I'm really sorry. I did not plan to torture you with this episode. I was just like, I should have Bridget on. And I'm like, this has a lot of slugs in it.
Yeah, no, you're doing your job. I don't blame you. The slugs are always the enemy.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is some solace if you put a banana slug in your mouth is that your tongue won't feel the slime because your tongue will go numb because their mucus contains an anesthetic agent. And that is another reason, though, animals don't really want to eat these guys, because like if you are a predator and your mouth is now full of slime and your tongue is numb, that is not going to be a good experience.
No, these. Oh, God, I hate them. I don't like them. I also, there's not enough money in the world if I was at your camp to lick a slug. There is not.
Yeah.
There, not there's even a not.
Little, not even a little kiss just to see if they're a prince in disguise.
I had a nightmare about slugs coming out of my mouth I was very young, and I think about it maybe once a week.
There's a Japanese comic artist, Junji Ito, who does these horror comics, and he has one where like these slugs come out of this girl's mouth. So I don't know why I'm telling you that, but hey, you're not the only one who has that fear.
I that's a good horror.
that's a good horror. So yeah. you can't kiss a banana slug, but what do amorous banana slugs do? I bet you were wondering that, Bridget, but you're wondering how banana slugs romance each other. And you want to hear about
it? Love?
Yeah.
I guess so. That's why I'm here.
So banana slugs, like all slugs, are hermaphrodites, and they carry both male and female organs. Mm. So that tongue-numbing, expanding slime horror also contains pheromones to attract a mate. So once a pair of slugs meet up, they will both exchange sperm with each other, kind of like how, you know, you meet up, like we both, like you meet someone, you both exchange your phone numbers and stuff,
right.
Except it's sperm, because they, you know, they both have both male and female reproductive organs, but they can't like self-fertilize. They have to find someone else. So they just exchange stuff, like here, you take some of my sperm, I'll take some of your sperm.
We'll see which one works out.
Right, exactly.
A little more forward than a phone number.
Well, maybe slightly, yes. But here's a problem, which is that once in a while they get a little tangled up with their wieners. And so if a penis gets stuck in the female reproductive tract, the penis must somehow be removed so they won't be locked together forever. Because that is a commitment that goes a little too far for these banana slugs. They're like, hey, cool, we'll meet up, we'll exchange our sperm, but I do not want to be tied to your wiener forever. Sorry.
Wait, so it always gets stuck?
No, just occasionally. Just occasionally. God, that would be a poorly designed animal, though. I'm sure it happens. I'm sure I'm going to find an animal like that.
Is it like how? I mean, this might not be a question. You know, how common of an occurrence is this?
Enough that it has been noted by researchers. I don't know what that means. I don't think it happens all the time, but it happens with enough regularity that we have observed it and documented it.
Okay. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah, enough. It happens enough.
That's right. It happens enough.
Once, I feel like, would be enough. But
once is too many, maybe. I would go as far as to say. Yeah, so usually it is the recipient of the wiener who does the chewing off, though sometimes the owner will chew off its own wiener in desperation to escape, like a wolf chewing off its own paw to escape a trap.
Oh, boy.
You see, what happens, the problem is the female genitals have these, like, muscles that, like, hold on to the male genitals, and sometimes those muscles just work too good, and it locks on there, and then they get stuck together, and they're like, well, somebody's gonna lose a wiener, and it's not gonna be me.
Oh, they're too strong for their own good.
Yeah, I mean, the one nice thing, though, is because they are hermaphrodites and they have both male and female genitals, it's like it's not just like one. They all run this risk, right? It feels sort of equitable, I guess. It's not one-sided. Right, exactly. Like they understand what they're getting into.
Someone was get their penis bitten.
Yeah, they probably don't understand that because they're not very smart. They've got like kind of tiny brains. But, you know, whatever. Maybe that's a blessing. Maybe it's good not to have self-awareness in that situation.
Yeah, in that situation, you kind of just want instinct.
Yeah. And then one last fact to just kind of like let this fact simmer in there. Once the penis has been successfully 127 hours off, typically the one who received the penis will eat it as a fun snack, because why waste it? Waste not, want not is what I say.
Oh my God. Monsters. They're monsters.
Well,
nothing to convince me otherwise.
Well, I mean, but are we the real monsters, Bridget? Because we don't.
No, I'm going to go ahead not yes and you here.
Right.
We are not the monsters.
That's actually probably fair, you know?
Yeah. This sounds horrible.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, I mean, look. It's easy to judge when you're not covered in numbing slime and getting your wiener stuck in another person, you know? It's easy to judge, right?
I guess I have not been lucky enough to be in this situation.
From our lofty position as a species that don't regularly chew off each other's wieners. Like, you know, it's easy for us to judge. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. By a high and mighty throne.
Why aren't all living animals hermaphroditic? That is, it seems like the safest way to ensure the continuation of the species is giving everyone both sets of reproductive equipment, right? Well, to answer this question, first let's talk about how different sexes evolved in the first place. Sexual reproduction evolved over 1.2 billion years ago in early eukaryotic cells. Eukaryotes are all organisms with a nucleus enclosed in a membrane within the cell. We're eukaryotes, worms are eukaryotes, plants are eukaryotes, mushrooms are eukaryotes. So early eukaryotic cells developed sexual reproduction, the exchange of two gametes, each containing a set of chromosomes that combine to form a new organism with two sets of chromosomes. Sexual reproduction has been the preferred choice of reproduction amongst eukaryotes, including most species of plants, animal, and fungi. This may be because sexual reproduction protects species from major bad mutations by having two different sets of chromosomes. So most plants are actually hermaphroditic, while just a few have two distinct sexes. Meanwhile, most animals are dioecious, meaning individuals generally have either male or female organs. One theory is that it's costly to have both sexual organs, as there are major energy costs. Producing sperm and gestating eggs both cost resources, so if you're doing both at the same time, you may be burning the candle from both ends, so to speak. When we return, we're going to talk about another lovely little slimy hermaphroditic critter who has no problem burning that candle from end to end to end to end.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and teachers. TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
While we sometimes consider mating to be a private affair, that's a very limited perspective. Not all species are so inhibited. Some species of frogs gather in huge mating mobs that can become so hectic and cramped that individuals get smothered to death. In fact, a species of Amazonian frog called Ranilla proboscidea is so highly competitive during mating, they forego the whole till death do you part bit, and males will actually harvest eggs from dead females to attempt to fertilize them. Other species of frogs have understandably shied away from these mass mating events by finding or even constructing their own private mating pools so they and their partners can mate in peace. Sea hares, on the other hand, have figured out a way to have very organized but still very public mating spectacles.
Okay, so Bridget, I do want to talk about another sluggish animal.
Cool.
It's not, I'm hoping this one won't, I actually hope you kind of like this one, maybe not, we'll see, let's go on this journey together.
Let's find out.
Yeah, have you, you know generally about like sea slugs, right?
Oh yeah, those don't bother me quite as much.
Oh good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about sea hares. So sea hares are actually distantly related to banana slugs. They both belong to the clade Heterobranchia, which contains snails and slugs both on land and aquatic. They are a type of sea slug. And actually on the show, we have talked about the sea bunny before, which is a related animal. And the sea hare, I don't think is quite as adorable as the sea bunny. Bridget, I got to show you a sea bunny. This is
I got to find out necessary. Sea bunny, because that just sounds too cute.
It's very cute. I'm going to show you.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cute. I can't hate that.
You can't hate it. So sea bunnies, like we've talked about before, are nudibranchs, and they look like little cotton balls with bunny ears and a bunny tail. And that little cotton tail is actually their lungs that they breathe through. So they breathe through their tushy, which is amazing and wonderful. They're one of my favorite animals, the sea bunny. And sea hares I don't think they have quite the same cuteness factor. If you Google sea hare, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because bunny is way cuter than hare.
So they're called a sea hare because the rhinophores, which are those like little fleshy antennae on top of their head, look a little bit like rabbit ears. And those ears don't really hear anything. They actually smell and taste the water. And there are many species of sea hare, and they are found all over the world's oceans in coastal waters where there's dense vegetation for them to eat. And they range in color and size. I think most of them look like weird little dumplings, I guess, with bunny ears. And they, the largest sea hare is the California black sea hare, which grows up to 30 inches long and 31 pounds. So that's 75 centimeters and 14 kilograms. That's insane. That's a little too much for me. That might be a little too much sea hare for me even.
Yeah, that's a big sack of goo.
That's a big sack of goo, exactly. So another species of California sea hare is the Aphlysia californica, Aphlysia californica, which eats red algae and consequently has a pinkish reddish hue. And not only that, but it can like actually ink at predators like a squid or an octopus, and it inks purplish pinkish ink in this big plume. So if you scroll down, you actually can see this, and I think it's rather pretty.
The ink is cool. The fact that it looks like it's coming out of its open back, I don't love, but the ink is cool.
Right. So what Bridget is looking at is this sea hare. And you know how like You know how like certain dumplings, they have like you it's sort of a semi-circle, and then the top of it, you kind of like pinch the edges of the dumpling. So there's like these like flaps on the top. Imagine that, but it's got a tail and it's also got a head with like little weird bites. Head face tentacles. Yeah. It's those like flaps are actually kind of wing-like parts of it. So the back isn't like split open. Those are just like wings that are kind of like resting on top of its back. But it is odd. It is an odd shaped animal.
Yeah, thinking of that as a 30-pound thing.
Yes, that's a little much.
Don't love it.
I think that that's its max weight. So yeah. that's at least we know it doesn't get more than that.
Yeah.
But that purple ink that it spews out is really interesting because it has an ink gland along its back that releases that plume of magenta colored ink, and it also can release a sort of white colored ink, which is made out of opaline, which is a component found in opal, which is distasteful to predators. So it's really cool. It's like they're, you know, like that the color festivals where you throw around like colorful chalk like or something.
Powder. Yeah.
Right. Or like I guess people are doing it now with like baby showers or baby gender reveal things.
Yeah. Yeah, let's stick with the color runs because the other one is stupid.
Yeah, where they like, I've actually heard like with the, so what I'm talking about is at these gender reveal parties, which I could launch into a whole thing of like, I don't know if we need to throw podcast. A party about that. But that's a different podcast. But like they will fire off, I guess, like colored powder where like I'm not a pyrotechnician, so I don't know how this works, but you like, it's like a little like smoke bomb, but then it sprays either like pink or blue. But then sometimes like these smoke bombs explode. So it's actually kind of dangerous. So maybe don't do it always, except unless you've hired pyrotechnic people. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you do want to have a pink plume and you have an underwater gender reveal party, you could bother a sea hare.
Just get a big stick.
And now that I say that all out loud, all of those words combined, I don't like them, so don't do that.
Get all your friends' scuba licenses.
Right. If you're going to do something as silly as a gender reveal party, you should at least do it scuba diving. Yeah. But don't bully a sea hare. I take that back. Do not bully sea hares.
Don't bully sea hares. So, don't have gender reveal parties. Simple solution. And
don't bully pufferfish. This has been like an after school special show about all the things. This is my new brand. It's just lecturing my listeners on which animals you shouldn't bully. Hint, it's all of them.
Just let them be.
So sea hares have parapodia, and those are those like weird fleshy ribbons you see that run along its back, and they actually can use them like wings. So they like swim sort of like,
oh no,
like, and flap them like wings. They fly in the ocean. I think it's pretty. Although I guess if you think about like a flying terrestrial slug, that
awful.
Does seem, yeah, it's not a great idea. But like their terrestrial slug cousins, they are also hermaphrodites. So meaning that they have female and male reproductive organs, but they are a bit less misanthropic when it comes to mating than the sea slug, because they hold these big old sea hare swinger parties where they form long mating chains.
Oh no.
So because they have both female and male genitalia, they can basically link up like one long sex conga line.
Oh my god.
Dun 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 dun. So the first in the line acts only as a female. The second in line mounts her as a male. And then I'm going to say they, because again, female and male genitalia. Right. I don't think, obviously these are animal sexes. Gender doesn't apply to these guys, but for clarity. So the first one acts as a female. The second one acts as both a female and a male. So on. And then the last in the chain only acts as a male. And that's because you see how that works, right? Like you mount the first one and then you're second in line, so you're also getting mounted, right. And then the third one is mounting the second one, and so on, yeah, and so forth, and you just get a big long fun conga sex chain.
Yeah, no, I feel like the slug at the front and back, they're getting the raw end of the deal. Everybody else, you know, seems fun.
Yeah,
to do
everyone
both.
Else gets to yeah gets
do both
gets to do both have both times. Yeah, I mean, actually, if you're thinking about it in terms of, I'm not 100% sure of this, but if you're thinking about it in terms of evolutionary cost, I would say the one in the front gets the most raw deal because yeah. laying eggs is costly, and if you can pass on your genetic material without having to lay eggs, that's cool. So the one in the back is getting the best deal because potentially doesn't have to lay eggs, but I'm not sure. Like, they may, like, I don't know if they only engage in like one sex chain. They could do a bunch of sex chains, in which yeah. case everybody gets a turn.
When they swapping sex
exactly,
chains.
Exactly. When they do lay eggs, they lay millions of them in long spaghetti-like strands. And that's cool.
that is cool. Gross, but cool. What a weird form of like spaghetti caviar.
You know, being awfully judgy, I think it's beautiful. These sex conga lines, and then they make egg spaghetti that turns into babies. Beautiful.
The circle of life is fascinating.
The literal circle of life, exactly.
It's up to interpretation.
Yes, exactly.
How you feel about it?
Look, it's the majesty of lovemaking amongst sea slugs, and I personally think it's great. I think it's beautiful.
I was like in middle school, and everyone was finding out about like grinding dancing at bar mitzvahs. People would everyone would line up, and it would be like boy girl in like a long chain of teenage dry humping, and that's what this reminds
boy.
Me.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, that is pretty similar.
Yep.
Again, what do you like? Do you think like the person at the front of the grind line, like, is that like a raw deal? Like, that seems kind of like awkward.
I feel like
you're
that's
just like you're like the.
I feel like that's the easiest like to navigate. You're only
really because it seems like, but then you're like the face of the grind line, and that seems like weird that you have to kind of like, if you're at the head of the grind line, then like you're like the head of the grind line, and that's like a lot of
right.
visibility and culpability that I wouldn't really want. I wouldn't
right.
want, like, are you the captain of the hump line? And I don't want to be like, yeah, it's me. I'm the captain of the hump line.
That was for the more confident, among us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not me. No, I would want to be somewhere in the middle. I would say like somewhere well within the middle of the grind
right.
line, or maybe like back middle sort of. And
right.
So that like nobody can see me being here in the grind line.
Right. And also like I'm not a good enough dancer to have set the rhythm for an entire chain.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I
or
need
maybe
to just go
I
with
don't
the
know.
Flow.
Maybe back of the grind line, because then I can like leave to go to the bathroom whenever I want. Because like being
yeah.
stuck in the middle of the grind line, like what if you have to go to the bathroom and then you're like stuck in the middle of the grind line and you can't like break the grind line.
You don't want to be
the one who broke the grind line.
Yeah, you don't want to be the one to ruin the grind line. It only takes one
exactly.
person.
God, this is making me sweat from social anxiety. So
I'm
so
sorry. It's
we,
what I do.
So. I feel like this is payback for Bridget having to learn about sea slugs as she's
yeah.
like, or learn about slugs as like here's some social anxiety for you, Katie.
I'm sure. sorry to yeah.
No, don't apologize. Pirate. I deserve it. No, this is very fair.
I'll let you go back.
Phobias.
I'll let you go back into your territory.
I think what we could all use at the end of this episode is to talk about big snake sex parties, right?
Cool.
That's cool.
That's a good
right?
closer. That's a closer if I've ever heard. Yeah.
I like to end on an uplifting note, and that is big snake sex balls. snakes may seem like unfriendly, but some species get really, really very friendly during mating Ooh. Seasons. And so let's talk about garter snakes. So garter snakes participate in something that is about as opposite of social distancing as you could possibly get, because sometimes they just wind themselves in these big balls of snakes that are all trying to mate. And it's great. And so garter snakes are a sort of smaller genus of snakes. They're typically harmless to humans. If they do have venom, it's very mild, and they can't really effectively bite people and inject that venom. So they're just sweet little noodles, and you don't have to worry about them too much. They come in different colors, each species, and they are endemic to North America. So if you are another North American like me, you've probably seen them around. I've seen garter snakes around, and they can be quite pretty. So the California red-sided garter snake is very stunning. It has these red bars on its side and a bright neon blue strip running down its back.
Wow, that's cool. That looks like a Power Ranger snake.
Yeah, exactly. So some species of garter snakes participate in massive sex parties, you know, just like Power Rangers.
That's a fanfic I read.
Yep. It's a fanfic we've all possibly written or read, all of us. We're all equally guilty for that.
Yep.
So there's another species of garter snake that lives in Manitoba, Canada, and they are called the red-sided garter snakes, and they do massive mob mating where tens of thousands of individuals slither together in a big, beautiful sex ball that is known scientifically as a mating ball, which I was like, I wrote these notes, and I was like calling it a sex ball. And I'm like, oh, that's crude. That's crass. I should look up the what they actually call it. And it's just called a mating ball. So, you know.
Yeah. It's what it is.
Yep.
It's unmistakable.
There's not too many words. I don't know how more poetically you could put it. Yeah.
Sphere, you know? Maybe. I don't know.
Sphere. Togetherness pile. Sphere. Pile. Yeah. Yeah, baby making pile. Again, doesn't roll off the tongue that well. So because the mortality rate for garter snakes in the winter is so high, it's kind of difficult if you're just kind of like looking in the singles pages to find a female to mate with. So their solution is forming a giant mosh pit that gives everyone a higher chance to mate. And that's great, but it does come at a high price other than just gross. They can also be fatal to males who basically expend all their energy and resources on sperm. So they're doing so much mating, and what happens is, like, before this mating, they aren't really eating at this point. So they are just on this mating frenzy, mating as much as they can without eating. So if you're
expending
if you're like expending a lot of your resources on these sperm packets that you're giving to the females, you're losing all the resources real quick. So sometimes it can be fatal for these males. They literally, you know, grind themselves to death. But some male garter snakes have developed an interesting trick. So when mating, garter snakes actually release pheromones, which males and females can seek out to find each other. And females and males each have their own brand of pheromone. But some tricky males produce both female pheromones and male pheromones, and that tricks other males to cuddle with them, which seems like, why would you want that? Well, so snakes are, like other reptiles, cold-blooded, meaning that they can't thermoregulate and they have to sit in the sun to get body heat. And conversely, it's not like their blood is always cold. Like, when they get too warm, they have to get in the shade to regulate that down. So basically, they just have to manually regulate their body temperature, unlike mammals. So if they want to get some cheap, easy heat, they can trick other males to cuddle with them and get some free warmth. And I don't know, like, of all the sort of sneaky strategies, like the in nature, I think getting free cuddles is one of the cutest ones.
That is one of the sweetest ones. It seems like a long way to just get a cuddle with your bro, but
I know, right? Right.
You know, like, they shouldn't have to be so afraid.
Yeah, it's so much toxic snake masculinity here. Just like, you know,
cuddle your bro.
Like, hey, just like cuddle your bro. Yeah. You know, and I know that's like right now we're all self-isolating, but if you do happen to be isolating with a bro, cuddle that bro. We all need cuddles. Responsible cuddles, though, at this point. Responsible, consensual cuddles. All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Only cuddle the people you're living with, you know?
Only cuddle the people you've been self-isolating with for a few weeks. And also, you know, consensually.
My roommate walked by at that moment and I said that and looked directly at her and then she left.
Well, did you try making her an intricate mandala out of sand or no, but inflating that is my your next nose move. Balloon?
Once we hang up, I'm going to fill this apartment with sand.
In Florida, there's actually a different species of snakes, these water snakes that also do these massive mating balls. And they are so, I guess, enthusiastic about it that...
Yes!
Have you seen this, like, where the...
I've heard of this, yeah.
Yeah. Park management actually warns park visitors of the big snake mating balls and like closes parts of the parks off so that these snakes can mate in peace.
For snake orgies. You said the mating ball thing and I was like, I've heard of this for some reason. And yes, in good old Florida, we have those mating balls.
It's really funny. They're trying to calm people at the same time as like trying to educate them where... And so this was a Facebook post by officials in Florida amidst the snake mating season. And they said, quote, "It appears that they have congregated for mating. They are non-venomous and generally not aggressive as long as people do not disturb them. Once the mating is over, they should go their separate ways." So like, please don't panic. They won't be here in a big sex pile forever. Don't worry.
Everyone chill. They're just having their, you know, yearly orgy.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the idea, though, that so, like, obviously social distancing rules don't have to apply to snakes right now. So, like, as we're all, like, having to stay home, and I feel like the snakes are going to be like, we have all the time in the world and all the space we want to have big sex parties. So they're just going to be everywhere. Like, not caring, not worrying, just taking over with their big, snaky sex ball.
Do they ever get stuck? This is a dumb question.
It's not a dumb question, actually. I bet some of them do.
Knot seems inevitable.
It probably happens, to be honest. I don't know, like, researchers are... going, like, kind of picking through these snake piles and, like, performing autopsies on the dead snakes to see what the cause of death was, whether they were, like, crushed to death or something. Oh. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say it probably occasionally happens. Like, if you're in the middle of a sex ball, that could happen.
I just keep thinking of, I think it's a 30 Rock, the Rat King. Where, like, a bunch of rats get their tails tied together and form a rat.
Yes, yes. Oh, I see. Like, you're thinking they might get, like, tied in a knot together.
Yeah, but that's the cartoon world I live in my head.
That does happen where rats actually, like, their tails get tied in a knot and they get stuck together. Like, if they're in too densely populated, I think that happens. Maybe it happens with snakes. I do think snakes are, unlike rat tails, I think because snakes have much more control over their muscles in their body, probably less likely to get super tangled, but I'm sure they at least get sometimes, like, for a little while tangled. Because, like, when they are mating, they do kind of wrap around each other, so it seems inevitable that someone's going to get, like, stuck. It's going to be, like, a twister situation where you're...
Right, you know,
like,
sex gets awkward sometimes.
Right. And you're like, is this my snake part or is this someone else's snake part? Yeah. And you think it's your tail, but someone else's tail. Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to laugh it off. You know, it happens to everyone.
Yeah, it's the beast of many, 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 many snakes is what they call it.
Yep. Of course.
Yep.
These are... snake balls. What a horrible thing to come across.
It's like a big ball of yarn, but made out of snakes.
I don't know why park rangers even say, don't go near that if I saw a big ball of snakes.
Well, that's you though, Bridget. I think I need that warning personally. Because if I see a big ball of snakes, I'll be like, huh. Like, I saw a big ball of bees.
Oh no.
And I went up to this ball of bees and I was like, huh. And only... as I approached them, I think maybe it's not a good idea to disturb the bee ball. But apparently they were actually just like searching for a new hive, and bees are actually quite docile when they are in that state. Right. So I was not in too much. Obviously, I didn't poke them or anything. Unlike some people, I don't bully random animals. But yeah, I would say, but I did. There was a moment where I was like, you know, while I do know a lot about bees, I'm not a total bee expert, so maybe I shouldn't approach this bee ball. And I would caution other people not to approach random balls of bees either, because you never know. Yeah. Like, I mean, they could be
fighting.
It could be that they're like chilling and searching for a new hive, and they're not particularly aggressive, or they could be plotting something and you don't know it, and they're just gonna like trying to form a Megatron of bees, and you wouldn't know it until it's too late.
Yeah, you don't want to be near that when that comes up.
Nope. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Bridget, and suffering through all of the slug parts. Hey,
Anything for you, buddy.
I promise you, I did not plan to torture you with this episode. It was all, Bridget's okay.
No, you were very kind. You were as kind as you could be about it. And I got off easy last time. I was on the cute episode.
That's so true. Next time I'll try to have you on a cute one again. We'll sort of like go back and forth, like horrifying cute.
I got the puffer fish.
That's true.
That's a fond memory I'll walk away with.
And the sea bunny. Sea bunny really washes down the banana
slug. I finally
slug.
Made peace with a mollusk, and that's the
you
sea
did.
Bunny.
You did. Oh, see, that's wonderful. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So do you have anything to plug, Bridget?
You can head over to Small Beans Patreon or, you know, Spotify, iTunes, and listen to Rough Stuff, a podcast that I host, where we invite some comedians on and we talk about some embarrassing childhood moments. And then also we have another podcast called The Cast and the Curious, where we're reviewing the Fast and the Furious movies.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So you can listen to either of those podcasts, or both, preferably, on the Small Beans feeds.
Yeah, I was on Rough Stuff, and I talked about how when I was a baby, I ate snails sometimes. And that's when I learned about Bridget's huge problem with mollusks. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Immediately, you were a monster.
Yes. Yep. Sorry. You can find us on the internet at Creature Feature Pod on Instagram, at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter. That's FEAT, not FEET. That's something very different. You can hear my Katie thoughts on Twitter at Katie Golden. Or, of course, as always, I am at Pro Bird Rights, where I am trying to put the reins of the world into the proper wings, not hands, of birds. You know, I think it's about time. About
the
time
noble
for
cause.
Bird revolution. It is. Noble cause. Because birds cough sometimes. Some of them do anyway.
Cause, yes.
Yeah. This is a comedy podcast about animals. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you're all doing all right out there. If you're enjoying the show, leaving a review and a rating and subscribing and downloading, all those things really help. I know it doesn't. You're sitting there thinking like that's not gonna help Katie. Katie's not gonna notice it when I rate it. But I do. I feel it. It feels like a thunderbolt going off through my heart. I'm like, somebody rated my podcast. I'm so thankful. It feels so good. It's like confetti everywhere. I love it. And it does actually really help the podcast. Gets us up in the algorithms, and that helps the podcast continue to be a podcast. Thanks to the Space Cossacks for their wonderful song, Exolumina. Creature Features a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit iHeartRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.